Hello, and welcome to another informative interview for our VIP members of HealthyRevelations.com. I wanted to remind you of some of your VIP member benefits. 30 to 40% discounts on all our health, spa, and nutritional products. Our very own VIP monthly newsletter delivered to your mailbox on or about the 15th of every month. You'll discover many wonderful health and nutritional facts designed to help you live a healthier lifestyle and feel great. Detailed product reviews showing the advantages and disadvantages of our products along with knowing whether it's right for you or not. Automatic shipping every 30 days so you don't have to remember to reorder. And monthly interviews with health and nutrition experts who will share alternative treatments to common ailments the medical establishment is hiding from you. Hear from acupuncturists, nutritionalists, dietitians, herbalists, chiropractors, and more. Now let's get to our interview. Paul Wozniak, happy to be joined by Vijaya Nair, MD, a researcher and epidemiologist who turned to alternative medicine when her own health problems weren't responding to conventional treatments. We're so happy to have you with us here, Dr. Nair. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Paul. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
You're welcome. And although billions of dollars are given to study cancer and other diseases, Western medicine hasn't made a dent in the death rate due to cancer and its complications. I understand you have your own story about bouncing back to optimum health due to alternative medicine. I would like to start, and can I ask you what kind of cancer that you had?
Oh, no, I had uterine fibroids. That's a benign tumor many women in the perimenopausal period experience, and well, the symptom mostly is heavy bleeding. In my case, I suffered a lot of bleeding with my fibroids that were growing very rapidly and needing me to have blood transfusions and being recommended to have a hysterectomy, that is a total removal of my uterus and ovaries.
And I was about to ask you what kind of treatments that you tried first. Did you go through with any of those treatments that were recommended to you?
Well, first of all, I went for a test to find out what, you know, what I had. And when they discovered that it was a fibroid, which is a benign tumor of the uterus, they, of course, immediately, because of the heavy bleeding, my hemoglobin had gone down very low, necessitating blood transfusion. So they recommended the first thing was hysterectomy and the removal of the uterus. And I had gone to see about five gynecologists and obstetricians that I knew and was recommended, and they all said the same thing, that this is too serious, you're bleeding very heavy, and it was going on for months and months without stop. So that was the first thing that I was told. And then I was, you know, I was working and researching at Columbia University in the use of phytotherapy, botanicals, and natural medicine. And so I thought I would find a more holistically inclined gynecologist, which I did, Dr. Alan Warshawski, who's in New York, practicing in New York at Beth Israel, and he had his own clinic in New York City. And he recommended herbs. Because I chose to do it with a herbal, phytotherapy, the natural medicine way, and with other, you know, modifying my diet and nutrition supplements. And I was researching at that time soybean, fermented soy. So I took the fermented soybean beverage and, you know, the whole array of homeopathic preparations and herbal preparations. And then subsequently, then I went, and all these, the herbal natural medicine, including traditional Chinese medicine, Paul, and even the Ayurvedic preparations, they helped to some extent. But after a few months, 6 months or so, the bleeding, the heavy bleeding started again. Then I knew there was something, you know, really seriously wrong. And I also tried a bioidentical hormonal therapy. And that also helped for a short while, and, you know, soon after, the bleeding just came back. And finally, I went for uterine artery cauterization. It's an embolization, actually, of the uterine arteries, the blood vessels that are feeding mainly to the uterus. Again, that procedure worked for a few months, about 6 months.
And could you simplify that a little bit for those of us who might not have gone to Harvard?
The uterine artery embolization?
Yes, please.
That's a procedure where the radiologist, it's not performed by a doctor. The doctor recommends your radiologist who actually just, it's like an embolization. They put a sandy kind of particle into the arteries to stop the blood flow through the uterine arteries into the uterus. So basically it's cutting off the blood supply for the uterine fibroids. So in that case, what is hoped is that the fibroids will shrink, small enough, but at the same time, the uterus will get the supply from the ovarian arteries. So which is, a collateral, what we call collateral arterial supply, blood supply. So that helped to shrink the fibroids a little bit, and the bleeding was contained also for another 6-8 months. And then it came back again. And I got very concerned about that. And at that time, I was doing research and I was going into my own, decided that, we can make, our own herbal soy-based, fermented soy-based curcumin supplements. And then I had an idea that, I have to take the right dosage. Looked up all the research on it as I was, preparing our formulations and getting ready to market it, and realized that you needed to take about at least 4 to 5 grams of curcumin and fermented soy, and that would help with a lot of malignant tumors, to reduce the malignant tumors, to improve quality of life. And true enough, within a week of taking my supplements at that right dosage, the bleeding started to decrease. And within a month, I had more than 70% reduction in my uterus. And I haven't had any problems with my bleeding for more than a year now.
Well, that's fantastic. Another welcome to our HealthyRevelations.com VIP members. And we're speaking with Dr. Vijaya Nair. And with the MD, I don't know how much they necessarily subscribe to alternative methods of healing. Did you feel like you were thinking out of the box whenever
Absolutely.
You decided to try different things?
Absolutely, except for my friend, Dr. Alan Warshawski. He was great. He had a different out-of-the-box thinking like I had about using natural methods to shrink the fibroids. And he also recommended the conventional treatments. And then more and more I was going with the doctors who are part of organizations of the American Medical Holistic Association and the American Naturopathic Association. So there are MDs, there are healthcare practitioners who think, out of the box and thinking about, using other than pharmaceutical approaches, using natural therapy approaches as well.
We're speaking with Dr. Vijaya Nair, and she has bounced back and is very healthy now. You are? Yes?
Yes, really. We have the fermented soy supplements and the curcumin supplements that I'm taking and, bringing out to light and educating people. I'm a huge health advocate for natural therapies. And it's not just supplements. It's also, meditation. It's learning to detoxify your body, detoxify your home, getting regular massages and, giving back to society when you can, your time and your effort. So there are a lot of things that we can do.
Botanical therapy, botanical is it comes from plants, correct?
That is correct.
So can you tell us why botanical therapy and mind, body, spirit medicine work so well when you're ill?
Well, phytotherapy is the use of plants, Paul, either in the whole food form or in the form of standardized extracts and supplements for healing purposes. And its roots trace all the way back to the beginning of time and still stand strong, in the world today. But in phytotherapy particularly, is the use of the medicinal plants to heal and restore the balance. So, and plants really hold amazing healing properties. And some of the world's most exciting research is being done around how plants can act to naturally balance hormones. And as we are learning about the underlying mechanisms of phytotherapy, the science has been able to show that it's able to increase its effectiveness while maintaining the gentle side effect profile that herbal remedies are known for. So, and you know that more than 75% of pharmaceutical drugs are actually plant-based. But when you look at pharmaceutical companies, what they do is that they alter the active ingredient of a plant and, or produce synthetic analogs of it. And so the active ingredient is so strong and so powerful, it overwhelms the hormonal system, the endocrine system of the body, and gives rise to side effects. So when you use natural therapies like phytotherapy, plant-based therapies, they are sometimes more gentle, and they work on the endocrine system. And phytotherapy, for example, the responses that originate within your cells, originate from the plant world, are known as phytocrine. And the phytocrines really encourage the body's tissue to generate more of their native hormones, so they can mimic the hormone functions that cause the same physiological responses of the hormones native to your body. So that's just a plant, and I can go on and on about that. But the other thing is the mind-body, the connection of using meditation, relaxation, you know, regular massages, you know, just getting in touch and connect with our body. I feel that a lot of illnesses that modern, you know, living and lifestyle, you know, is putting a lot of stress on our body and causing disease, it's because most of us are not connected with our bodies. So there are a number of ways that we can find connection back that restores balance, and I think the key word is balance. So when you restore balance in your body, the body can heal itself. And that's why, you know, so it's not just using plant therapy, but it's using a combination with mind-body healing techniques as well. And in many cases, you have to look at your heart and you have to think about, you know, the hurt, the emotional conflicts that you're holding within. So all that it's all learning how to forgive yourself and getting out the negative energies out of your system. So there are more ways than one to do it. But plant therapy is essential. It's one essential tool that we use in mind-body health healing.
Another welcome to our HealthyRevelations.com VIP members.
And it sounds like whenever you talk about mind, body, spirit, it might come down to one word, and that word could be attitude.
I certainly believe. My training is a psychiatrist, you know, and I have a background in psychiatry, and I spent, more than 15 years in the field. And it was amazing to see that. And science is showing now that people who have a positive outlook, who are more optimistic, who see the glass, you know, half full than half empty, their rates of healing from any given illness is much more pronounced than somebody who is pessimistic or has a, you know, poor outlook on life.
We're speaking with Dr. Vijaya Nair. She is an expert in epidemiologist. And she is a big believer in alternative medicine, and that's what we're speaking about today. And you were talking about phytology, is that the word? Is that plants?
Phytotherapy, yes.
Phytotherapy. And that's using basically plants, botanical therapy.
That's correct.
And mind, body, and spirit to work when you're ill, and the importance of attitude. And we do appreciate you joining us for today. You have your own story of how you bounce back to your health. And a lot of folks who are probably listening might be facing some problems, and they might need to go see their doctor. And a doctor or hospital visit can be quite intimidating. Can you talk to us about the responsibility of the patient? Because doctors can't answer questions that aren't asked. What do patients need to know to achieve the best result from their interaction with their doctors?
That's a very important question, Paul. And I know even as an MD myself, when I fell ill with all my training and expertise, but when you come to the doctor's office and you're facing a colleague, it could be a friend or somebody in the medical field who is not thinking outside of the box, who just looks at you as a organ, you know, that is giving problems, or you are just a disease, you know, of an organ, and not the whole person. My advice to you is that if you feel in the first encounter, it doesn't matter how many degrees the doctor has, it doesn't matter how, you know, many papers he has published and all his reputation, but if you sit on that one-on-one consultation and he is not treating you, or he or she is not treating you as a person, my advice is that get off and go away and, you know, just go get a second opinion. The other thing is that if your doctors are more enlightened and more open and really wanting to help you, you can get that sense, you know, even within the first half an hour of your visit, sometimes even sooner. In that case, you know, you need to explore. And I always advise patients, you know, I said, if you cannot do it because, you know, you don't have the necessary knowledge, ask your family or friends to check the internet on what your condition is. And write down the questions that you want to ask your doctor. And so when you go on a doctor's visit, ask them about, you know, what you have and ask them whether it's okay to call them or email them or, you know, explore different ideas on how to get well. And one of the important things is the patients have to be trained on how to ask these questions. So sometimes if they go alone, and I have counseled many people on this, is don't go alone, especially if you're suffering from a chronic illness or terminal illness or something that doesn't have a good prognosis and you're worried or you're scared, even if a minor illness, go with someone else and train and talk to yourselves what are the questions you want answered. So take out your paper and ask the doctor, I'm sorry, I just need about 10, 15 minutes of your time, and ask them the questions that you need. And if you feel the doctor is not being able to give you the answers because, you know, they're so many patients that he or she has to see, ask them, where can I go and what can I do to explore? Do not just agree with everything the doctor is giving to you. You know, say you need time to think about it. So that, is, to me, is the best advice. Think about it. Go back and talk to somebody else that you know. Maybe you might have to go for a second or third consult. I did 5 or 6 consults, you know, and I was told that I had to have a hysterectomy and there's no other way out.
And that doesn't sound like a very good prospect.
No, and these were good doctors. You know, they were well established in their field, but they only knew one way of thinking, surgery, or, you know, they weren't willing to think outside of the box. And you want to work with someone who can think outside of your box. You know, so help you to get the most natural remedies or nutrition as well. And sometimes your doctor is open and says, look, you can go and see a nutritionist or, you know, an integrative, holistic healthcare practitioner. So always have a team approach. If you have, especially a serious illness, have a team approach. If you have to see an oncologist, see an oncologist, but let them know that you're seeing a holistic healthcare practitioner who's advising you on nutrition and mind-body health. That's a very integral part. And, of course, somebody who you can bounce off your ideas and keep your attitude and outlook positive.
The team approach with different doctors and different people in your lives is probably one of the best ways to approach it. But for the layperson who might not have a background in medicine at all but is facing extremely frightening prospects, are there any resources where you would direct people to educate themselves in order to find the right questions they need to ask their doctor?
Well, one of the resources, depending on the illnesses they have, but for cancer, for example, you could go to the some of the cancercure.com or .org. You know, the Cancer Treatment Centers of America, for example, it's an excellent site, and they have a lot of resources on natural healthcare practices and conventional practices for treatment. The American Holistic Practitioners Association, American Holistic Physicians Association, American Holistic Medicine Association, the American Naturopathic Association. There are many, many sites now that's coming up to give you, you know, good responses, especially on the Internet. And some of these organizations are very, very helpful. The American Cancer Society, for example. You know, so the list is endless. And in my book called Prevent Cancer, Strokes, Heart Attacks, and Other Deadly Killers, I give a whole a list of resources that people could use to ask these questions and get some really reliable answers.
And I was actually about to get to a question about prevention rather than cure, because they say that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. What can people do to act on behalf of their health rather than react to a problem after it comes up?
Well, that's a very important area, Paul, to look at, because, you know, we may not have any illnesses, or we may have family members. Most of us, if not all of us, know a family member or a friend or someone in their, you know, the inner circle, or, you know, that have gone through the devastating effects of chronic health issues. And you know, you have to pay so much of money to get the treatments, and sometimes the treatments don't work, and you run out of money, and you have to mortgage your homes and go into bankruptcy. It's a real healthcare crisis right now, and that's why it's so important to look into prevention. And I talk a lot about that, because I said the important thing, and I talk about in the book, the Prevent Cancer, Strokes, Heart Attacks, and Other Deadly Killers, is that we have to think about living in an inflammation-free lifestyle. And inflammation is now, scientists are finding, it's a core, you know, at the basic root of, let's say, all bad health or poor health. And to live an inflammation-free life, it takes a lot of, you know, addressing a lot of lifestyle habits that we've picked up over a lifetime. So one of the things that we look at is diet. And that is a very, very important thing. And it won't surprise you to learn that, you know, foods promote inflammation. And these are already the same, you know, foods that you already know are bad for you, like white flour, flour products, other refined grains, trans fats, you know, sugary foods, they're high in sugar, meats that are high in saturated fat, even vegetable oils like corn, sunflower, soybean oils. Previously, many experts have touted it as being healthy, but actually pro-inflammatory. So the typical, as you know, the SAD, the sad American diet, Western diet, is heavy on foods that promote inflammation. So the idea here is now in the prevention thing that we're thinking about, we're saying now eat more fruits and vegetables. And fruits and vegetables contain very impressive stores of the anti-inflammatory and antioxidants, the phytonutrients, and they protect us from different diseases, including heart disease, cancer, and arthritis. The second thing in terms of diet is to eat 2 or 3 servings per week of cold water, fatty fish, such as salmon and tuna and mackerel. And just make sure that if you're buying the fish, make sure it's organic and it's like, for example, the wild Alaskan salmon or halibut or you know, you need to take fish that is not, you know, high in mercury. And the third thing is use olive oil as your primary cooking oil. And fourth, you can have, like, if you emphasize whole grain products or beans or nuts or seeds. And beans and food in their natural state have more fiber and vitamins and phytonutrients than the refined, processed, or GMO foods that we find everywhere. So learn to read the labels, you know, behind, you know, everything that you buy so that you know what you're putting in. And as long as you see something that says MSG or, you know, high fructose corn syrup or trans fats or saturated fats, run away. Don't take that food, you know. It's a habit, and they say the habits, you know, you take 21 days, you know, to form a good habit. So once you have a conscious decision, I'm not going to buy these kind of bad foods, you know, for my family or for myself, you know, you instill the practice in your family members, in your children, you know, that's the best way to go. And the second most important thing is, of course, get moving. You know, you need to do some kind of exercise, and you need to form something that you can do like 30 minutes, you know, 3-4 times a week. And then there are many good reasons to say exercise decreases the inflammation, the low-grade inflammation, chronic inflammation in your body. And, you know, there are many, many ways that you can exercise. You can do yoga, you can do Tai Chi, you can do anaerobic exercises, aerobic exercises. So, you know, that's very good for you. And thirdly, you can do regular massages. Now, people might think massages are indulgence. It's not, because I prefer to look at it as part of an exercise program. You know, it gets your circulation going, keeps everything flowing, your blood, your lymphatic fluids, even what the Chinese physicians call qi, or vital energy, or prana, as the Indian Ayurvedic doctors will call it. And massage has a similar benefit. It's wonderful for getting rid of knots and tension, but also increases blood and lymphatic circulation. And research has shown that the massage, a good massage, can help to move toxins out of the area where they usually congregate, like the buttocks or the belly or the back muscles. Thirdly, you can give yourself the sleep. It's very, very important to have good sleep. And I can't, you know, say enough that we need to have adequate sleep. And chronic deprivation causes so much of problems. The next thing is to detoxify your home. Wherever there's hazardous waste products or, you know, around your home, you know, like carpet or paint or particle, you know, board that we use, some of the things that we think it's all benign is actually quite toxic. You know, what we call the volatile organic compounds, VOC, you know, because a lot of bad furniture and even dry cleaning clothes emit the VOC chemicals. So these are all toxic, like, you know, the cleansers and disinfectants and air fresheners. You have to look into all that and see, well, what's wrong in my home that's not good for my body or causing me an allergy, you know, symptoms that appear. And then, of course, you detoxify your body. Good idea to detoxify your body every 6 months or so, because you store a lot of toxic chemicals in your fatty tissues, and they can stay there for decades. And there are many, many places where you can go, you know, like, for example, the Hippocrates Health Institute in West Palm Beach. And my favorite, the Maharishi Ayurvedic Center, you know, there's spas that are located all over the country where you can get, you know, herbal massages and detoxifying your body in many, many different ways.
I'm not familiar with the process of detoxifying, so if you could just talk about the process of detoxifying. Do you have to go to a certain place and have certain things done, or can you bring products home with you to detoxify yourself at home?
Well, that's a good point. Well, I usually advise people that if they're going to do a detox, their body, like, for example, the colon hydrotherapies, you know, because where, you know, there are different forms of doing it, you know, because you can, colon is, your colon or your large intestine You can gently irrigate it with water and remove toxic waste buildup. It's best to do it with, when you're doing for the first time, do it with a practitioner, a healthcare practitioner, like a chiropractor or nutritionist who are experts in that area. So they will give you products and they will do a gentle detox at their clinic or at their center, and then, give you products that you can take back. So for the persons who are doing it first time, they may want to do that, or they want to stay in a place for a week or 2 weeks and do a detox, inpatient kind of treatment for themselves. So there are different ways of doing it, but be under the supervision of a healthcare practitioner you trust.
And it sounds to me like you're just bringing, old wisdom whenever you say, you get out what you put into it. Whatever you put into your body, that can be what you get out of it.
That's right. And we need to watch it. The key word is balance and conscious. So don't just be mindless just because, I'm stressed, I've got to eat everything and eat the junk food and, but you're putting so much of stress in your body by just doing an instant, what we call the gratification. You need to know, I am going to get stressed. I need to eat. So planning your meals way ahead for the day or for the week, even one day at a time says, I know I'm going to get craving at 4 o'clock. I have the 4 o'clock, coffee slum and, I'm existing on coffee and caffeine. So plan yourself, I know that's bad for me, so what else can I do? So maybe taking like green tea, scientists are finding that if you drink 4 to 5 cups of green tea a day, that helps to be a powerful antioxidant for your body. And it's a great de-stressor and a booster for good energy. So you don't have to depend on coffee alone, to go high on coffee and de-stress yourself by taking green tea and other antioxidants.
And we're speaking with Dr. Vijaya Nair. She's a researcher and epidemiologist, a background in many, many different things, and she's had her own health problems herself. And I want to ask you something as someone who has bounced back from some problems with your health. Do you still have a burger every now and then?
I'm a vegetarian, so a veggie burger, of course.
Is it okay for people who maybe want to clean up their lifestyles a little bit?
Yeah.
I mean, is a hamburger from your local restaurant, is that the end of the world?
No, it's not. What I practice and what I teach people is that, go easy on yourself. Don't beat yourself up. You have more problems with the guilt and the emotional guilt you put on yourself than that burger. So, read yourself and say, today I really do feel like eating something, that I wouldn't normally eat. And just go and enjoy it. Don't make it a practice of it. It's, I know I can eat it all the time. But when you time it and when you tell yourself, you eventually lose the taste of doing, eating something that's not healthy for you. But every now and then, as you're going through the process, understand it, accept it, that, your body is precious. This is the only body you have. And the prevention, like you said very nicely, Paul, an ounce of prevention is worth all the cures in the world.
You have 5 tips to de-stress your life, enjoy more time, get by on less sleep, and our favorite part, have a great sex life.
That's an excellent, because when you have the increased energy and you feel, great with your body, you're moving, you're exercise, guess what? You feel the libido coming up. And you feel energized and you can have, and your attitude is good and, you're taking care of yourself. That's the first step. When people think they have lost, everything in life, but when their health, when they concentrate on their health, and maybe, maybe a wake-up sign for them to start thinking about their health and focusing on their health. So when you get back your health and you're energized with just natural products and natural good foods, your sexual intimacy and your relationship with your loved one, it improves. It's so much higher. So despite all the stresses, other stresses you're having, the first connection we should have is to our bodies.
And I do thank you very much for your time. I guess the last question that I want to ask you is about sometimes trying to do everything at once can cause you to fail. Where would you tell people to start?
I would start with getting rest. That was one of the first principles that, I was running around getting all these treatments and getting advice from everyone. It was very, very stressful, especially when you're having had the stress of the illness yourself. I think the first thing is to learn to keep time to rest, and the second most important thing, and it works together, is to learn to meditate. 20 minutes twice a day. The meditation is a keystone in my life, because no matter what stresses and what emotional, feelings of anxiety and worry, and I'm a worrywart, for example. I stress out and worry, but when I meditate, twice a day, 20 minutes, and I sit with myself and I connect with my body, I feel that, you know, it's like cleaning yourself from within. We spend so much of, you know, money on cleaning ourselves, you know, buying all the soaps and, you know, taking care of our beauty outside. But the internal beauty, the internal way to the good way not to let stress get to ourselves is I feel for myself, and for many, very many people that I know, is to meditate twice a day and rest, use as much rest as possible for your body.
Dr. Nair, tell us the title of your book again and where we can get it.
The title of my book, Paul, is Prevent Cancer, Strokes, Heart Attacks, and Other Deadly Killers. And it's available in Amazon.com, or it can be available also on my website, which is www.jivasupplements.org. And Jiva is spelled J-I-V-A, J as in Jack, I as in India, V as in Victor, A as in Apple, jivasupplements.org. Or people could also call our 1-800 number. It's 1-800-517-7606. And we'll be happy to send a copy of the book or, you know, just write to me on my email and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Dr. Nair, it's been very informative and we appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.